Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, May 7th. I'm Ray Graff. The coin and stamp experts are back for another hour of calls from all of you collectors out there. Bob Scott and David Tripp join us this afternoon. So if you are enthusiastic about coins or stamps, or both, you want to get your call in early. The number, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us if you wish. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address. But again, the number, 800-348-2551. Bob Scott, David Tripp, stamps, coins, your calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Collectors, it's the moment you have been waiting for. We welcome back our stamp and coin experts. David Tripp is the former director of Sotheby's Coin Tapestry and Musical Instrument Departments. He is author of Illegal Tender, Gold Greed, and The Mystery of the Lost 1933 Double Eagle, as well as a fine art consultant and cartoonist. Also joining us this afternoon, Bob Scott. He was a curator to a private collection, senior technical specialist at Christie's, and head of the stamp department at both Sotheby's and Bonhams. He is currently a private consultant whose clients include Sotheby's, for whom he cataloged the world's most valuable stamp. If you have a question about stamps or coins, now call 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. David and Bob, welcome back to the show.
We are thrilled to be here, are we not,
Bob? We are thrilled.
We're thrilled to be anywhere today.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, everybody is just a Twitter. The excitement is building because a Bill Gross collection of multiples is selling tomorrow. And who's Bill Gross and why are we excited about it?
Bill Gross made his money on the bond market, wasn't it?
Yes, big bond boy.
Billionaire stamp collector and... I mean, an incredible stamp collector. I think we should point out that belated happy returns to the stamp.
Ah, what do you mean?
The stamp itself.
It turned 179 years old yesterday.
The first stamp.
The very first, yes.
And that was the...
Penny Black.
Penny Black.
From my home country.
That's right, the Penny Black,
yes.
From your home country. And then the Helena Bonham Carter was the second stamp, right?
I think it was something like that.
Yes.
Or is she Scott number three?
That would be Stanley Gibbons number three.
Oh, excuse me, I beg your pardon.
So yes. The Bill Gross collection, it's all his multiples?
It's all his multiples, and it goes from the regular stamp. Actually, it goes from the provisionals, which were pre-stamped through the 1847 issues, right up to about 1920, and then large blocks of airpost stamps and what we call back of the book issues, which are postage due stamps, parcel post stamps, special delivery stamps, soup to nuts, and actually some incredibly spectacular things at anything from really a couple of hundred dollars to, well, there's one set, 1861 issues in blocks, at $500,000 to $750,000.
Well, so what is your budget looking like?
What's your price point?
Got about $3.
You could start a syndicate.
You know, that will get you a block of forever stamps now. So in 180 years' time, the infamous Ray Graff collection.
Yes, there you go. The last inverted Jenny. Sold?
$1.5 million, the most for, I believe, any 20th century U.S. stamp.
Ever.
And those
ever.
Who don't know.
And
those
and
who don't
the most
know.
Expensive Jenny.
And that those who don't know what that is an airmail stamp.
That is the that famous. Is actually part of the first set of airmail stamps. We used to have airmail stamps because mail traveling on planes was a thing rather than an ordinary... The commonplace way of shipping something.
Right.
The 24 cent value, which was carmine red and blue. The plane was, it depicted a plane within a frame just flying through the air, and they printed one sheet with the plane backwards.
You know, that's a...
Upside down.
The correct,
upside down, down. Yeah. Yes.
Correct version of that stamp. It's a beautiful stamp.
It's pretty spectacular.
And the upside down one must be really nice.
Well, actually,
and this one was, because you said this one was absolutely pristine condition.
This thing had been off the market since the sheet was discovered 101 years ago.
Ooh.
And it had been kept in a bank vault for almost all of that time. And it was as if it had just crossed the counter at the post office.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It looked as fresh as the day it was printed.
Who bought it?
I was about to say, Bob, did you buy it?
I did not buy it, and I do not know who did buy it, but I could make a guess, and I won't be discussing that on this program.
Oh, all right. Well, maybe during the break. All right, David Tripp, what's new in coins, and then we'll get to the phones.
What's new in coins? You have a choice. The Mongolia has,
I'm sorry, what?
Mongolia has issued coins with pterosaurs on them.
Why?
Because that's actually Mongolia is where some of the greatest fossils the world have been discovered.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are celebrating pterosaurs in this issue.
Okay.
And so you get
pterosaurs.
Pterosaurs, nice. Flying dinosaurs, pterodactyls.
That's great.
Very cool. And actually, they're pretty cool coins. The silver coins are, what's Bob? They're 500 Togras.
Togrogs.
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 That's the denomination.
Okay.
And Bob knows exchange rates extremely well. So one togrog will get you, well, $1 will get you how many togrogs?
2,644 togrogs as of today.
Wow.
Right. And this is a 50 togrog coin.
It's a 500
togrog coin.
Wow. And it's worth possibly as much as 19 cents.
Yes.
Oh, I'd like to get
but
those.
But if you want one at retail,
yeah,
that's going to run you about $168.
What?
The money goes.
I mean,
is where the money is made. This is where collectors should always be a little bit leery of buying new issues from the issuers, and this includes the United States government, I might add.
Okay.
The aftermarket is the market to get them in, because generally speaking, a few years later, the price goes down. But Bob and I were just entranced when we were doing some research for the show about togrogs. I'd never seen a togrog in my life.
Yeah.
And it was just the name of it that sort of inspired us. And the silver togrogs have a little gold dinosaur on them. So they're very cool indeed. The gold togrog, which is 1,000 togrogs, is that right?
Is 1,000, yes.
But it's a very boring, just plain gold coin.
But it's not real gold though, right?
No, the gold coin is actually gold, and the silver coin is just basically a gold wash.
Ah, okay.
But it's a very, artistically, it's extremely effective.
Mm, okay.
Oh, it looks
it's
good.
A very cool-looking thing, which is why we brought it up. So that's the most interesting one. And just last week, Belgium issued a 25 euro in honor of Audrey Hepburn.
Ah,
who turned 90, or would have turned 90. She didn't turn 90. She's turning in her grave.
Right.
Nice.
Yes.
Thank
turned off,
that.
One might say.
Yes.
May 4th.
May 4th, yes. So just a couple of days ago. And at retail, it's the same price as 500 togrogs.
So that's roughly...
exactly.
2,600 to a dollar, so...
And 25, exactly. Yeah. So there you go.
All right, there you go. And then there was a big coin sale recently as well.
Yesterday, as a matter of fact. Yesterday in Zurich, Switzerland. And there was a phenomenal price, or an actually very healthy price, I thought, for basically what you would almost consider one of the earliest silver dollars. It was a silver coin of the silver dollar size. But this was made in Athens about 465 BC.
Wow.
And on one side, there's a portrait of Athena, who was the patron goddess of Athens. And on the other side is her owl with its spread rings. And the owl was sacred to Athena. And this particular one brought just about $800,000.
Wow.
Which is a great price until you start figuring out dollars and cents. Sotheby's sold one, which I was fortunate enough to work on a sale when the Hunt brothers sold their coins 30 years ago.
Right.
And we had one that brought $528,000 30 years ago. So is this really a good price? It is, because a whole batch of these recently been discovered.
How many is a whole batch? I mean, how many are there of these that were made in 465 BC?
Well, how many are there or how many survived?
How many
they made a lot.
Okay, but how many are around for collectors to have?
There are currently, I would guess, about 30 to 40.
Okay.
When we sold the one 30 years ago, there were about 10 or 12.
Okay, so they found a bunch.
So they're popping out of the ground.
And how do we know they're real?
That's a good question. There's a lot. Actually,
we have to take a break. So we'll answer that question, and then we'll get to the phones.
Okay.
800-348-2551 is the number. It's Vox Pop. David Tripp and Bob Scott are here at Stamps and Coins. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. Stamps and Coins today. David Tripp and Bob Scott are here to answer your questions. The number is 800-348-2551. And before we get to the phones, quickly, just give us a Cliff Note version of how you would tell if this ancient Greek coin was real.
Practice, practice, practice.
That's it?
That's it. I mean, basically, I've spent far too much of my time looking at them. You compare known ones that have good pedigree, which means they know when they came out of the ground, so you know they're absolutely old.
Right.
You then compare the new ones that are coming on the market. And as with anything, coins have been faked since the day they were made because they were money.
Right.
And so there was money to be made in money. And as these things have gotten more expensive, obviously the sophistication of fakers is amazing. So you compare the genuine ones to those, and frequently you'll find that the genuine ones are the models. They will take a cast of a genuine one and then use that to create the fakes.
Yeah.
And you can eventually, if you look at it, either the metal's wrong, the weight is a little bit off, or you see the same flaw repeated over and over again.
Interesting.
Which was there in the original, but it wouldn't keep repeating itself.
So when they made these coins all these years ago, they were that precise that, in other words, if there were 1,000 struck, they all were pretty well the same?
Well, they all pretty well the same. That's one of the reasons I love ancient coins particularly, because each one is essentially unique because of the way they make it. They were not machine made as our, $100 going through millions are struck a day in Philly. These, you would have two basically pieces of metal. You would put a heated piece of silver, in this case, in the middle, put the die on top of it, hit it with a hammer, and it would come up.
Yeah.
And that was it. Now, sometimes they put the piece of metal down, and the metal was off to one side. So some of them are perfectly centered. Some of them are off-center. You get any number of variations. Some of the guy might have been weak at the end of the day, didn't hit it as hard, so it looks like wear, but in fact, it was just a weak strike.
But doesn't that make it...
They all have a human component.
But yeah. Does that not make it difficult? Aside from the ones that are direct copies of ones that may have flaws, doesn't that make it tough to sort out the real from the fake?
No, actually, that's not really what you worry about with the fakes, because frequently the fakes give themselves away. I mean, in the 19th century, in the Renaissance, people were making their own dyes. And now as they've gotten more sophisticated, sometimes things look just too slick and too cool for their own good,
yeah.
And, too cool for school. And these things were made 2,500 years ago,
yeah.
And they do have characteristics. This is not to say that we don't get fooled. I can go back 20, 30 years ago. There were coins on the covers of catalogs, major auction houses, that 2 years later turned out to be forgeries.
Oh.
The forgers had taken models of ones that were in the British Museum.
Oh.
So
how
they
would
matched
they get access
up.
To that? Inside job?
Well,
yeah?
the British Museum used to for educational purposes, made very good copies called electrotypes, which they sold to schools. And these are collectibles in their own right. And some very clever forgers got these and made copy dies based on the British Museum. And it wasn't until a very clever guy said, this has got the same scratch where the British Museum coin has a scratch. There's something here. And the metal almost looked like melted chocolate on the gold ones.
Huh.
So, there's a fabric to it. And it's, as I said, it's practice, practice, practice. the more gray hair you have, the probably you'll pick up a few more until the brain starts getting sour, which is sooner than later.
Well, you're halfway home.
Thank you.
David Tripp is here. Bob Scott is here at Stamps and Coins today. And then we're going to jump on the phones right now. This one email came in. Black penny stamp is the subject heading. Is it a good investment to purchase a used black penny first stamp in England? Current price now at about $300. And that's from Sue.
Is it? They produced something around 42 million of them in the really 1-2 years that they were used for, before they found out that the black color was too easy to remove the red cancels, and for a penny, people would wash the ink off and use them again. The penny black became the penny red. It was quite amazing because it was a unique thing, these new stamps, which prepaid mail, that so many people kept them. By conservative estimates, 1 million survive.
So $300, you think?
So $300, but
for decent quality.
Quality is it. If you've got a really nice example, yes, I think that's because the
You'd
first
want to have it in your collection anyway, wouldn't you want to
have it? Well, because it's representative. It is the first stamp.
But that's it. It's always going to be popular. It is always going to be, for a common stamp, it is proportionately overvalued, but it's always going to, because you will always be the first. So I would say yes.
Okay, let's jump on the phones and Larry in Columbia County. Larry, you're on.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, Larry. How are you?
About 10 or 15 years ago, we were in Paris, and at a flea market, I bought a couple of silver dollars.
U.S. silver dollars.
American silver dollars.
Okay.
One dated 1803 and one dated 1804.
All right. Well, I can tell you the 1804, the odds are very, 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 very high that it's a fake.
Well, someone told me some years ago that the Chinese the 1800s were copying these coins.
Well, try that. The Chinese today currently are flooding the market with these. With your 1804 dollar, the easiest way to check a forgery, generally speaking, look at the four in the date. The crossbar should not have a serif at the end. That's a frequent error that people make. And also, there's a little flip, sort of like a little cowlick that Liberty has coming up. If the cowlick is there, it's definitely a fake, because in the original one, it chipped off the die where it was filled. And so it's not, there's no full flip. The odds are that if you bought them 10 or 15 years ago, market is flooded with these. We'll give you the email address. If we see an image of it, I can tell you very, very quickly.
What is the email address?
It is Coin and Stamp Guys, all spelled out, at...
Where are you? You're up in the Albany area?
Yes.
More or less. But the email address is a good way to start, and that once again is...
Coin and Stamp Guys, all spelled out, at Burke, B-E-R-K, .com.
All right, Larry, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Stamps and Coins today on the program. We go to Bruce in Pittsfield. Bruce.
Hi.
Hi, Bruce. How are you?
Very well, thanks. I'm trying to start some research on the $1 bill.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you fellas had a good recommendation for either the approach or some literature that I could start with.
Well, there's a standard reference by Friedberg, which is on all United States paper money, which is always a good place to start, because it gives all the, and you're talking about just basic federal $1 bills as we have floating around in our pockets today.
Back to the Martha and George Washington. I'd like to start at the beginning and work.
Well, Martha, you've got to remember that federal banknotes, coinage goes back much farther as a federal government than do banknotes, because we had banknotes during the colonial period. But that's an entirely different area. And then we went to banks issuing. We have what we call broken banknotes, where individual banks issued their own paper money. Mm-hmm. And then in the 1860s, basically, the government really took over the production of banknotes. And so a $1 denomination, as we know it today, really would go back to the mid-19th century and not further back, because that's an entirely different cup of tea.
And these would be banknotes that, even though they're actually quite valuable, they're right. actually still worth their face value. You can exactly. spend them.
Yes, they have not been demonetized. So the Friedberg book is a good start. If you're interested, and it actually does cover... Well, Friedberg basically covers the federal issues. If you're interested in the colonial issues, there's a book by a man called Eric Newman, which is early banknotes or something to the effect of that, early currency of the United States. All these should be, if they're not in your library should be able to borrow them for you.
Great.
Okay.
Thanks, Bruce. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Bob Scott and David Tripp are here to answer your stamp and coin questions. And Juan in Kingston is next. Juan.
Hi, how are you guys?
Hey, fine. How are you?
Hey.
I'm doing great, thanks. Sorry.
Did you drop your coin?
It wasn't a stamp.
Drop the penny.
I'm a metal detector guy, person,
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah.
And by default, coin collector. And had some good luck. Last year, I managed to dig a 1796 cap, Liberty cap cent, and I know they're fairly uncommon, and it's in pretty good shape for a dug coin. My question is whether or not it's worth getting it professionally graded and slabbed.
That's a good question. There are lots of varieties of 1796 cents, and this is the Liberty cap, which is scarce. It's as they were going through a design change in that year. But is it? It's identifiable, but how corroded and coarse is it?
You can see all the details that you would want to see on it. You can read, you know, Liberty on the front, and
right.
one over, you know, 1 cent on the back, one over 100. You can make out some of the letters on the edges,
but not all.
Not all of them.
Okay. So from the point of view of having it professionally graded, if you're going to sell it, that makes good sense. These days, mm-hmm. almost no serious collectors will buy something that hasn't been slabbed, as we call it, or given a third-party certification. Since it's something you dug up, and if you just want to keep it, it may not be worth the money to you to have it done. It sounds like it's in very good, fine condition, in which case, you know, it's $700 to $1,000.
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty good.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Hey, can I ask you a question, Juan?
Of course.
So, you know, this whole metal detector thing, for years, it's been a topic of conversation, and my family just laughs at me because I want to get one. How much did you spend on your metal detector?
Which one?
Oh.
Yeah, that
the one that I currently use was a mid-range one that was $800.
And how far down will it detect underground?
Really depends on what your target is. So I'll use a quarter, for example, and in good ground conditions, you can find a quarter at about a foot if you're lucky, but that's about it.
That's about far enough.
That's pretty
Juan,
nice.
Well, thank you very much. Now I know what the folks can
And
get
now you
me
know
for.
How much to spend. Okay. Yeah, no,
that won't happen. But you know, let's go to Judy in Rochester. Judy.
Hi, how are you, Ray? Hi. I love your gardening show especially.
Well, thanks. I think it's coming up soon.
They're wonderful.
Thanks. We like his gardening show, sure. too.
Oh, you could have one every week for my money. I mean, I just think it's fabulous.
Well, we're obviously cluttering up good space.
That's okay. You guys will be fine.
No, I like this show, too, because I'm calling.
Oh, okay.
Good.
I have two questions, one a general one. Why is collecting, or seems to be... falling in disregard, I guess. And then the other one is I have some duck stamps,
mm-hmm.
60s and 70s, mm-hmm. and not a lot of them. But I know sometimes somebody needs just one or two to fill out their collection,
right.
or, you know, whatever. And I'm just wondering how I can go about selling them, first of all, getting some value, and how to sell them.
Well, I tell you, Judy, he's pulling out the catalog
but
now.
While
so,
he's doing that, I will talk about the death of collecting.
Yeah. Go ahead.
A lot of it is generational. When we were kids, you know, you'd go through your change and you'd look for a coin. Bob would look at stamps. It was a wonderful way. How many letters do you get in the course of a week now?
Not too many.
That have stamps on them.
Yeah.
Same thing with coins. Kids don't look at them anymore. They do have a tendency to be looking at other things on the internet.
Right.
And that has had, there's no doubt about it, hasn't had an effect. If you go to a coin show and you look at the attendance, the attendees, you're going to see a lot more people like me that have gray hair than you are going to see younger people. And I think it's a generational thing. I'm hoping as kids get a little bit older, I think everything will eventually adjust itself. But right now we're in that kind of we're on that slippery slope right now, and eventually we'll get to the bottom and then start moving to the top. Hopefully we will not be Sisyphus, push the stone up to the top and have it roll back down on us.
You might. I don't know whether I completely agree with that, because I think collecting is a human trait. I just think that the collecting has moved into different areas, because the collectors the collectors that we work with are people that collected on a very simple level when they were children.
Yeah.
And then what they do is they go back and they buy their childhood. Now, people in a lot of ways are doing that with comics and cars and baseball memorabilia. And I think that there are probably the new collectibles that are around us at the moment. We just don't know they're collectibles.
And in all candor, and I agree with Bob on this, because there is a certain, you know, be honest, you know, there's sort of a certain geek factor to coins and stamps. That's certainly that's perception. But there's also, it's becoming a little bit of geek chic, because a lot of the Silicon Valley people, there are a bunch of people who have a lot more money than I will ever see or can even count to, that are starting to make little inroads into coins and things
very
like that.
Yes, very much so. Yeah. So there are new people coming up. They're just changing their habits very slightly.
As that's what I was saying. We've gotten down, and then we're going to hit the bottom, and then things will readjust.
All right.
And it's not the end of the world.
Yeah. We should go back to duck stamps.
Oh, yeah, ducks, yes. That's right.
Tell me a little bit about your duck stamps. Do you have year dates?
I don't have them in front of me. Some are signed, some are unused.
Okay, so and they're single...
They're brand new.
And they're single stamps?
Yes.
Right. I just finished a sale that I wrote for Sotheby's that took place from the end of March to the beginning of April, which included an absolutely complete collection of hunting permits, or duck stamps as we call them, right the way from 1847 to about 2010, including all the major eras.
Yeah.
And I will tell you this. The market for duck stamps has fallen quite dramatically.
So somebody's shooting the ducks out of the sky.
Everything from the 1960s has a price, and I can just tell you offhand that from 1960 to 1970, the catalog price per unused stamp varies from about $20 to $100. And then from around about $10 plus or minus for a used or a signed
copy.
That's
pretty good.
They are cancelled by signature, so that gives you the used. I will tell you quite honestly that even though the retail value for the unused stamps is between 10 and 20, if they're really nicely centered examples, you've really got to divide that by, I'd say, a 5.
Divide.
I would say that they are
$2 to $4 a piece.
So if you've got one of the $120 stamps, you've really got to look at it as being worth $25, and that's if you can find a collector.
Okay.
They are freely available on the internet. I would hold on to them.
Hold on to them. All right, Judy. Thank you for the call. We have to take a break. It's Stamps and Coins today. Bob Scott, David Tripp, they're both here, and so are you. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. It's Stamps on Coins today. Bob Scott and David Tripp are here to answer your questions and two emails and then back to the phones. This one came in from Jamie. A friend was left a small collection of ancient Roman and Persian coins, mostly BC. How might he get an honest appraisal of the coins?
Well, the first thing to do is find out whether they're genuine. That part of the world is rife for forgeries, as we were discussing earlier. My suggestion to get things started would be if he can take a couple of photographs of them and send them to us, and we can get him started in the
okay.
right direction.
All right. And the email address once again?
Is coinandstampguys, all spelled out, at berk.com.
Now, if these are forgeries and they're 2,000 years old, do they not have some value as well?
Ancient forgeries can have some value, yeah. but also that neck of the woods, there are lots of modern forgeries.
Ah.
And a lot of them are pretty crude, so it's okay. pretty, some of those are very, very easy to spot.
This one's from Joe, and then we'll get back to the phones. Joe in Bern wants to know, we inherited a cigar box full of old stamps from mostly the early 1900s. What should we do with them?
First of all, find out the countries. If it's all basically United States, if the color's predominantly red and green, which was a system designed for indicating the lowest denominations and actually the more mass-produced and the commonest type.
So what's the rare color?
Anything that is not either red
or green.
Green, okay. blue, brown. Anything out of that generally tends to be slightly better. But okay. by the fact that they had actually been sorted out and put into a cigar box makes you think that somebody actually knew what they were doing
yeah.
to put them in
yeah.
there in the first place. So probably just an interesting curio that you can take out and yeah. show to friends.
But you never know. Maybe yeah. you find that one valuable
you can
one.
Do, and you can always go to the library,
Scott's catalog
large
for US
library, and or you can even wander onto eBay if you really want to have a look. And they have an identifier, which they show the pictures of all the better stamps. Unfortunately, there are an awful lot of really, really common stamps that bear a striking resemblance to stamps that have numbers like 500,000
oh.
and
oh.
750,000 attached. To
well,
them.
To me, that is reason to go through them, because you never know. Maybe somebody in 50 years ago who had the cigar box didn't know what he was doing.
Absolutely.
And do you get those?
Absolutely.
I mean, we've had, in my area, I've had little weird little people have come in with something they found in a cigar box, and it turns out to be a Lulu, a really good
yeah.
thing.
You
With assemblages of stamps, have you found that
usually,
to be the case as well?
It's usually when good things come out, it's because they've been passed through a family. And they've always been told, this is valuable, this is valuable. In a lot of cases, this is valuable can convert into, it's $100. But in a lot of ways, when the average value is nothing, $100 is something.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I went to, over 25 years ago, I went to a trailer park and I saw a family that had something that had been passed down and was valuable.
Yeah.
And they handed it over, and I looked at it, and I thought, it has to be a fake, but it looks
so
absolutely
good.
Right. And it was Ooh. Absolutely right, and it was $120,000.
So it does happen.
So absolutely yeah, yeah. it does. That's,
those are the great stories. We'll do that one time on all the Bob and I can,
we've got
we
a
can
few
fill
of
you with a few.
Okay.
Be
well,
fun.
Next
yeah.
time, let's get back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's go to Gail and Oneonta. Gail, you're on.
Hi, I have five Sacagawea dollars and 2000 with a D, and I think there's a P under. Is there a Philadelphia?
P is for Philadelphia. Yes, they did start. Traditionally, okay. they didn't put a mint mark for Philadelphia since that was the home office,
yeah.
as it were, and they only did the branch offices. But more recently, they have been putting P's on them. Sacagawea
okay,
dollars.
I was wondering if they're worth anything or you think they will be.
They made them by the millions. It's
so I can spend them.
Essentially, unless they are in absolutely pristine, plus pristine condition, in which case they're probably worth you know, a few dollars. And I, when I say a few dollars, I mean very few. I will try and very quickly give you an idea of what they are currently selling at, if we've got 2 seconds.
Sure.
And it's not going to set the world on fire,
okay.
I'm afraid. So Sacagawea dollars. I can't even. Okay. So we're looking at uncirculated condition at a run of for 2,000 P in uncirculated condition. A dealer will pay $1.
Oh.
Okay. And if you've got a 2009 in position A, they'll pay $3. So the answer, you answered your own question, spend them.
Okay. Gail, thanks for the call. What's position A?
I have no idea.
Okay.
And why would a dealer pay a dollar for a dollar coin?
It doesn't make much sense.
Well,
number here is 800-348-2551.
Maybe he has to fill the parking meter outside.
David Tripp and Bob Scott are here. And Jimmy and Rhinebeck. Jimmy, you're on.
Hey, thanks, guys. I had two quick questions. $2 bills from 1976, are they...
If you $2. Go down to Monticello, they give them to you in change because Thomas Jefferson is on them. No, they are. It's the most unfortunate denomination in the world because people mistake them frequently for $1 bills, or so few of them are used that when a teller sees one, they think it's a fake.
Yeah.
It's an amusing thing to have, but literally, if you go down to Virginia, the gift shop at Monticello gives them out in change.
Yeah,
they are not collectible, but they are funky.
Yeah.
I have two big Liberty coins. They're a dollar bill from 1923 and 1922.
The peace dollar type by Franceschi, yes. In sort of average condition, sort of slightly worn, or are these in pristine condition?
One's slightly worn, and the other one's in pretty good condition.
Okay. You're probably looking at $20 to $25, $30 a piece.
Okay.
Yeah.
So slightly more than
right.
the value.
Slightly more than bullion value. Exactly. You know, you're going to
thank
replace.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ray's going to replace us. You too can be replaced.
You know,
exactly.
Not sure. Let's go to Nancy in Utica. Nancy.
Hi. Good afternoon. I came across my father's stamp collection. He and his World War II buddy were really into that kind of thing, and. The stamps are really well preserved from probably the 1920s to the 1970s.
Right.
And some are circulated, some are uncirculated.
Mm-hmm.
There's the ones that are the blocks that are really well preserved, and then there's some that are singles,
mm-hmm.
canceled and uncanceled. So I've come upon this, and what I'm wondering about is where would I get an estimate to their value, because I figure if somebody sees something that's of great value, I might not get an honest appraisal, and I would want to sell them eventually.
Can you
point me in the right direction?
Well, I could probably give you some guidance. If he collected, let's say, the regular issues and in blocks from 1920s onwards, the only thing you mm-hmm. really have to focus on are the stamps issued from what is either the beginning, mid, late 1920s up to about 1940. But to be honest, you've really okay. got to concentrate on the stamps from the 20s and maybe the very early 30s.
Okay.
Look for the highest possible denomination. If the denomination really doesn't go higher than 10 cents, you probably won't have a collection that even in total will add up to more than $100 or $200. So you mm-hmm. have a guideline. You've not got something that you're not going to be losing thousands of dollars if some ne'er-do-well dealer yeah. comes and offers to buy it. If you could take some
right.
photographs of the early issues or some scans. Photographs are actually better if they're in focus, and send them along to me. I'll tell you exactly what it's worth. And just all you would then need to do is give me the start date and the end date. And I will do two mm-hmm. things. I will give you a pretty good idea of what the market value is. And I will tell you what mm-hmm. the root of the real value, which will be its postage value.
Oh, well, no. Is there not a book that Nancy could get in the library and do some research?
No, because unfortunately it will create unrealistic expectations, because every stamp, whether mint or used, in the catalogs that we use has a value of 25 cents, whereas 95% of them have that 25 cents means nothing. It represents the cost of a dealer walking back into his closet, picking up the stamp and putting it down in front of
you. And I will tell you this, having looked at Bob's stamp catalogs with catalog values, there is some alchemical, strange way that, you know, it's catalog value is $5,000, but it's really worth $1,000 or $1,500, or it's worth $25,000. I've never been able to understand it.
No, it is. It's a mystery. And the catalog is, the truth is, a stamp is worth the higher of the amounts bid by two interested parties.
That's interesting. But my point is, in a relative sense, if she has the collection and said, oh my gosh, look at this. This plane's upside down.
Yes.
It's a little beat up. She would at least know, okay, well, this one could be valuable.
Right. But unfortunately, that's a 1918 stamp, so that's out of the picture
immediately. You know, you're parsing, you're making specifics out of this.
Devil's in the details.
I cannot be.
Go to Karen in Saratoga. Karen, you're on.
Hi, gentlemen. I have some modern yet older coins, both Mexican pesos that are from before they reevaluated their currency and dropped off several zeros from the count.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also have some Spanish pesetas before Spain went to the euro. Do those have any monetary value?
They sound more like what we would call tourist change, things that you probably picked up while you were there on holiday. Unfortunately, unless you
I was living there. It was the money I had left over when I came back.
There you go. Exactly. That's it. Most of the material that has been converted into euros, governments basically have demonetized it unless you have vast amounts and then take it to the central bank. You can't even get face value for it today.
Okay.
And dealers will basically pay you by the pound.
Okay. Well, that's bad news.
Yeah.
Over to Suzanne and Rhinebeck. Suzanne.
Yes, I have a collection of stamps from World War II, from the Belgian Congo, and from French Equatorial Africa. And the ones from French Equatorial Africa, some of them have a stamp on them that says Free French.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering whether there's a place, there are collectors in the States who might be at all interested in these stamps, or whether the only way to sell or to evaluate this collection is to go abroad.
You will certainly get a higher price abroad because there are definitely collectors of such stamps in this country, but the higher concentration will be in Europe. It's a very interesting field because there's varieties on the overprints and there are collectors of the basic stamps as well. This is actually quite a nice little group, but these areas started producing stamps in under the rules of different countries going back into the 19th century. The stamps, are these all from the Second World War?
Yes.
That means that there are slightly less, but there are very, very decent varieties of it. It's something that if you go to a... You can go to a large enough library and get the international Scott value, or if you're really lucky, you could go if you can get a decent stamp shop in the city, you can get the Iver and Tellier catalogs, which actually list all these varieties, and they have the specialized catalog. Is it a large collection? Is it a number of albums?
No, not a number of albums. I would say one album and some sheets.
One album and some sheets. If you can take some photographs they won't scan very well. And if you were to pop them along to the email address we have, I'll be happy to look at them. There are some of these that have some value. There are also some, and actually most of them are actually quite common. But there are people that buy these things. I'd be happy to just put you in touch.
What is the email address once again?
It's coinandstampguys@burk.com.
coinandstampguys@burk.com. Suzanne, thanks for the call. We go now to Ginger in Port Jervis. Ginger.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon.
Hi. Hello.
Several years ago, I inherited some canceled European stamps from the 30s and 40s from my cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And one sheet just intrigued me, and I'm wondering if it's worth even taking to someone to look at. It's from Germany. It's got a lot of Hitler and Nazi stuff. It's in German, so
yes.
I can't read it. But it just intrigued me. So,
is it a picture of Hitler?
Some of them have pictures of Hitler, mostly like a side view profile.
Okay. There were numerous definitives, and they were, as you can imagine, as soon as the war ended, all the Hitler stamps, not a lot of people were using them on mail. So, but people don't do, there are two things they don't do. They don't throw away stamps and they don't throw away old money, even if they're told it's not worth anything. So many, many, many tons of this material got put into drawers following the end of the war. And as a result, they've been coming out of the drawers over the last 75 years. It's almost all extremely common.
They made a lot of them.
They made the propaganda machine that Germany operated was second to none, and it was years ahead of its time. Okay. And they did nothing but put swastikas and pictures of Adolf Hitler.
All right.
Lots of it, very common, no real value.
We only have about 20 seconds
here.
I
can do this quick.
Tor in DeLanson, you only have about 15 seconds. Go ahead.
All right, real quick. I've got two coins. They're both 1909. One's an Indian head penny, one's a Lincoln head set.
What
happened that year?
That was the year they changed the designs. Victor David Brenner started making them in 1909. It was the 100th
anniversary.
It was the 100th anniversary of Abraham Lincoln. So they changed the design from the Indian head to the penny. So yes, two 1909s, different designs. Absolutely, bang on. $3 to $5 a piece in very fine condition.
Very nice. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen, for being here. Support comes from Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever, agstewardship.org. Fisher Ferry General Store, offering freshly prepared food and eclectic gift items, open Thursday through Sunday, fisherferrygeneralstore.com. Gather, shop, eat. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Marketing the Mohawk Valley, celebrating the scenery of the Mohawk Valley and landscape and early beechnut advertising. More at arkellmuseum.org. And C&H Architects, helping clients throughout New England and New York to create a legacy of sustainable architecture through design and collaboration, designed for the next 100 years, C&HArchitects.com. Thanks again to David Tripp and Bob Scott for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Great calls, as always. Zach Malloy has been our engineer. Your calls are answered by Susie Checkeye. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin returns to answer your pet health questions. Right now, stand by for The Book Show.